Welcome to the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Christian Research Institute President Hank Hanegraaff. Our mission at CRI is not only to equip you with orthodox Christian doctrine, apologetic accuracy and discernment, but to help you become a faithful apprentice of Jesus Christ because life and truth matter. If you'd like to ask Hank a question, please call in now at 888-ASK-HANK. That's 888-275-4265. For more information about CRI and the Bible Answer Man broadcast, go to our website at equip.org. And now, here's Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. As always, the number to dial to get your questions answered live on the broadcast, 888-ASK-HANK. Numerically, 888-275-4265. The resources that I talk about on the show, you can find on the web at equip.org. You can also write us at Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. And our resource consultants, they're standing by, 888-7000, and the letters CRI. I want to say a little something about the subject of abortion. There's an incredibly good article in the Christian Research Journal on that very subject. It's titled Abortion and the Moral Law. Everyone is naturally aware of a standard beyond themselves that determines right behavior because the moral law is written on our hearts. No wonder having an abortion is such a very difficult thing for a woman to do. Again, the Christian Research Journal, you can find on the web at equip.org. You can subscribe there in a safe, secure fashion. There was an article that came out in lifenews.com about 66 Methodist, Lutheran, Episcopalian, and United Church of Christ leaders signing a letter supporting abortion. That article points out that a group of Iowa clergy, along with religious leaders, have signed a letter to the Des Moines Register last week advocating for abortion on demand. Imagine this. A group of clergy and religious leaders advocating for abortion on demand seems unthinkable, but I can tell you it's true. The letter blasts Iowa lawmakers who are trying to pass a bill prohibiting abortions from the moment an unborn baby's heartbeat is detectable, about 6 weeks of pregnancy, saying that it is not the role of government to infringe upon a woman's right to make private medical decisions. The 66 signers, I mean, this is incredible. They include leaders from the United Methodist Church, the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America. Now, there's an oxymoron. Evangelical Lutheran Church. The Episcopalians. The PCUSA. The United Church of Christ. The American Baptist congregations. And Reformed Judaism. Let's think for a moment about the current science. In 2016, that's only a couple years ago, researchers at the University of Oxford found evidence that an unborn baby's heart may begin beating by 16 days after conception. This is long before a woman even knows that she is pregnant. And nonetheless, these pro-abortion religious zealots claim that the Iowa bill is based on religion rather than science, saying that the constitutional right of women to make their own health care decisions is being attacked in the Iowa legislation with arguments based only in religious beliefs. It will harm a woman's right, they say, to make her own medical decisions. Every person has the right to have their own personal religious beliefs and to live their life how they determine is best for them. If an abortion involved only a woman's body, maybe they'd have an argument. But of course, it self-evidently does not. an abortion involves two human beings, and to argue that unborn human beings may be killed because of their size, their level of development, their environment, or their degree of dependency is quite simply horrific. Protestant and Jewish religious leaders should be advocating for the rights of all human beings, especially for the most vulnerable amongst us. Championing a Holocaust is quite simply unthinkable. And yet these people have conceded on the basis of incontrovertible biological evidence that the fetus is human. Imagine that. They've already conceded that point. So these pro-death people are now changing the parameters of their argument. Yes, they concede the baby is human, but they go on to say it does not have intrinsic value until we say it does. In other words, we're going to determine who is worthy to live and who is worthy to die. Princeton ethicist Peter Singer has argued that parents ought to have 3 days after birth now to decide. So they're not just talking about abortion, they're now talking about infanticide. But whether infanticide or abortion, what is in view here is the painful killing of an innocent human being. I've elucidated that in a lot of my books. I won't recapitulate that right now, but it is the painful killing of an innocent human being. Liberal Protestant religious leaders routinely now use biblical pretext to retain some semblance of religiosity while at the same time espousing their radical planks in terms of their pro-abortion movement and its arguments. The classic for them is the argument from breath. Because Adam was not a living soul until God breathed the breath of life into him, they argue that children do not become human until they breathe. Now, dispensing with this argument should be a simple matter, and you should be equipped to do that. Adam was inanimate before God breathed the breath of life into him, but a preborn child is alive from the moment of conception. It is the form, not the fact of oxygen transfer or breath that changes at birth. And then they use these clever code words. These are the opium of pro-abortion religious leaders. The words are specifically designed to dull human sensibilities. You know, you think about the moniker Planned Parenthood. That might be the best example. You know, it sort of has a positive ring, which masks the horrific reality that to abort a preborn child is to terminate a life. The preborn children that are killed are indelicately referred to as fetuses, and pro-life advocates are profanely recast as social extremists. So these are the clever code words that mask the horrific Holocaust in our midst. Well, tolerance is no doubt, it is the first and the greatest commandment of the pro-abortion lobby. Its essence is forever memorialized in that oft-repeated refrain, "You don't like an abortion? Well, don't have one. Just don't impose your morality on me." Well, at first blush, the mantra sounds rather tolerant, but if you think about it for a moment, you'll recognize that it is flawed. Imagine someone in the interest of tolerance applying the same reasoning to rape. You know, don't like rape? Don't rape anyone. Just don't impose your antiquated morality on me. I've often said it and bears repeating. Tolerance with respect to personal relationships is a virtue, but tolerance with respect to truth is a travesty. Then, of course, there's the inequity ruse. A woman forced to carry a baby to full term cannot compete equally, they say, with a male counterpart in the workplace, and thus she must be provided the latitude to abort. Well, if you carry that to its logical conclusion, the inequity argument applies to abandonment as well. Imagine the absurdity of arguing that in order for a woman to compete equally with a man, she should be afforded the opportunity not only to abort a preborn, but to abandon a preschooler with no enduring reference point. Societal norms, of course, are quickly being reduced to mere matters of choice. And as a result, multiplied millions of preborn children are being sacrificed on the altar of abortion. And to be complicit in this abortion carnage in the year 2018 ought to be unthinkable. To say as religious leaders that we stand with women in opposition to the rights of children, whether preborn or not, is unconscionable. To say that our personal religious belief should never be the driver of public policy, which is precisely what they said, is to abdicate the moral mandate God has placed on our collective lives. It is hard to imagine liberal, Protestant, and Jewish leaders overtly saying right thinking does not trump the rights of people to do whatever they think makes them happy in the moment. To say, as these religious fundamentalists have said, that every person has the right to live their life how they determine is best for them is extreme, to say the least. If this were so, every person would have the right to beat women and children, or for that matter, have the right to own slaves, whatever they determine is best for them. Society be damned. Religious leaders are no longer basing judgments on natural law or on objective frames of reference, but on whatever is right in their own eyes. As such, they're urging devotees to do the exact same thing. This is nothing less than a prescription for societal chaos. To see political hacks writing letters in support of taking the lives of the most vulnerable amongst us is one thing. To now see religious leaders doing the same thing, quite another. God help us. Let's go to the phone lines. The number to dial, 888-ASK-HANK, Robert First, Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Hi, Robert.
Hello there, Hank. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Excellent. At the beginning of the piece that you just spoke, you mentioned something, and it kind of piqued my interest. My mom attends a church which has the term Evangelical Lutheran within it. It's a very, very small community-based church, a couple of hundred attendees on a single Sunday service, that kind of small, fairly close-knit church, but nevertheless, the term Evangelical Lutheran is part of the name of the church. So in the first part of what you were saying there, you mentioned that Evangelical Lutheran is an oxymoron, and I wondered if maybe in particular in what you were saying, that you were referring specifically to the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America, or were you maybe saying that that would apply to any church that would call themselves Evangelical Lutheran? I was just looking.
Well, I was actually making a quip that applied to the Evangelical Lutheran Church specifically. The ELCA, the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America, is not evangelical at all. It denies the essentials of the historic Christian faith. It either compromises, confuses, or outright contradicts them. So it's hardly evangelical, and that's why I called it an oxymoron.
Okay, understood. I just wanted to make sure that I understood where you were coming from with that, from an educational standpoint, not from a challenge standpoint.
Well, you're welcome to challenge me as well. But there are, within Lutheranism, there are evangelical Lutheran denominations. I mean, you think about the Missouri Synod Lutheran Church, very, very evangelical. So there's a big difference between that which is evangelical and that which is not, and I find it highly ironic that the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America has that moniker, evangelical. They ought to get rid of it because it's not evangelical at all.
Okay. All right. Understand completely. Thank you.
You got it. Thank you so much for your call. Coming to the station break, we'll be back on the other side of the break with more answers to your questions right here on the Bible Answer Man broadcast. The number to dial, 888-ASK-HANK. Do you remember the journal that I mentioned earlier in the broadcast, available for those who subscribe? You can subscribe in a safe, secure fashion on the web at equip.org. Also, lots of resources in line with what I was talking about, the article on abortion in the current edition of the Christian Research Journal. I've also written on this subject in many different forms, including the complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition, and a suggestion: we need many of you to join Sierra's monthly support team. When you do, be pleased to personalize a copy of any one of my books to you, a family member, or a friend. One of the most popular choices is the complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition. You can check it out on the web at equip.org. You can write me at Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271, or talk to our resource consultants, 888-7000 and the letters CRI. Back with more answers in just a moment.
While millions of Christians may know a fair amount about God, they do not adequately know Him. Their spiritual walk remains little more than a cold intellectual assent to tidy packets of rational propositions, rather than a daily transformational experience of Christ that fuels a joyful life and dynamic witness. If this describes your situation, be sure to read Pastor Rankin Wilburn's remarkable book, Union with Christ: The Way to Know and Enjoy God. To receive your copy of Union with Christ, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. We'll return to the Bible Answer Man broadcast right after this. When you need answers about the Bible and the intersection of our faith and culture, you turn to the Bible Answer Man broadcast and the Christian Research Institute. But did you know we're entirely supported by God's provision through friends like you? In appreciation for your gift of ministry support today, we'll send you Hank's book, The Third Day, a convincing case study on the most important truth of Christianity, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Johnny Erickson Tada has said, "Hank leaves no stone unturned, thoroughly portraying the resurrection as our grand hope, the glorious springboard from which we all dive into eternity. Strengthen your defense of the resurrection and increase your confidence in your own eternal future. Call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org now." In his book, Union with Christ, Pastor Rankin Wilburn shows that our neglect of union with Christ explains the gaps between our faith and our lives. When the work of Christ for us becomes abstracted from the person of Christ within us, is it any wonder there is a chasm between our beliefs and our experiences? If we're serious about being agents of change for God's kingdom, we must first realize that we cannot be transforming unless we ourselves are being transformed. And that means putting down deep roots into the life-transforming waters of God's Spirit. Be sure to read Union with Christ: The Way to Know and Enjoy God by Rankin Wilburn. Receive your copy by calling 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or just visit online at equip.org. Has God spoken? Are the words of Scripture merely human in origin, or are they in fact the very words of God Himself? 3 years in the making and based on two decades of research and reflection, Hank Hanegraaff's monumental book, Has God Spoken?, answers what is surely the most important question facing our world. In Has God Spoken? Memorable Proofs of the Bible's Divine Inspiration, Hank counters the contentions of the Bible attackers and clearly shows that belief in the Holy Scriptures is not a guess or wishful thinking. It is the only logical conclusion after an honest examination of overwhelming evidence. Order Has God Spoken from the Christian Research Institute by calling 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org, equip.org. In his remarkable book, Union with Christ, The Way to Know and Enjoy God, Pastor Rankin Wilburn writes, "Of all the good news the gospel brings, the greatest, and indeed the door to all the rest, is that you can be united to Christ. And if Jesus has joined his life to yours, then you have been given everything you need for life and godliness. But unless you are united to him, all that he has done for you remains useless and of no value to you." To receive your copy of Union with Christ, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Let's return to your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you much, Randy, and we'll go back to our phone callers, Alec, in Calgary, Alberta, Canada next. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah. My question is, I've recently watched a program on National Geographic about cave paintings in a particular cave, Chauvet in France. These paintings have been dated to 32,000 to 33, and they're the best example of earlier man's paintings. They could hang in any art gallery. They're just so wonderfully done. Now, my question is, the generations of Adam to now are listed in the Bible, and I don't know, exactly about 5,000-6,000 years if you add them all up. How do you how would you reconcile the dates of these paintings to the biblical generations of 5,000 or 6,000 years? They've been radiocarbon dated, and I think there's more than one dating process. The what else was there? Now, my view is that possibly Neanderthals, which I think were human like anyone else. I understand that if you give a Neanderthal a shave and put him in a business suit and a haircut, he'd be indistinguishable from people in modern day city. So, but the question is really, how is it that the generations from Adam are so far apart from the dating of this Chauvet cave? And I think that's spelled C-H-A-U-V-E-T.
Yeah, I'm familiar with the caves and the argument. I mean, the fault in the premise here is the idea that somehow or other the Bible is giving you a complete genealogical construction of everyone that lived, and this is most certainly not the case. I mean, you see that in a lot of different ways. For example, Cain and Abel are only two of the thousands of progeny that Adam and Eve would have had over a long period of time. I mean, they lived back then right around 1,000 years. I mean, there's a lot of time to propagate during that period of time. And that's a long, long period of time. That's half the time between now and going back to the time that our Lord walked the earth. Not only that, but if you look at the genealogical constructions, you'll see that they are symmetrical. There are 10 prior to the flood and 10 after the flood. So they're designed in a particular way. Just like all the genealogies are throughout the Bible, the same thing is done by Matthew. You have 14 generations, 14 generations, and 14 generations, and they're designed to correspond with David's name, who's the quintessential king of Israel. So the genealogies, quite evidently, are not complete, nor is the Bible designed to tell you how old the universe is. The Bible, in terms of time, is not written to give us chronology. Rather, the Bible is written to give us chirology, God's purposes in creation, God's purposes for humankind. There's one other thing that I would say is it's kind of interesting if you look at the idea of modern cosmology, you'll find that most people believed in an eternal universe prior to Big Bang cosmology. The only people that didn't were Christians. And the reason Christians didn't believe in Big Bang cosmology is we have the first few words of the Bible saying, in the beginning, God. Now, if you have a beginning, you don't have an eternal universe. And if you have a beginning, you also must have a beginner. Every effect has to have a cause equal to or greater than itself. So the Bible, again, isn't designed to tell us how old the universe is. If you want to find out how old the universe is, you do the kind of thing that you're doing, very wisely so. You start looking at the evidence that we have on planet Earth. We have, in essence, two books to look at. One is the Bible, the other is the book of nature, and the book of nature, as you have correctly elucidated, that book points to a universe that is far older than 5,000 or 6,000 years.
Okay, that seems to make sense. So the chronology that is given in the Bible, someone begat someone else, and Noah begat, on and on. If you add them up, though, they
yeah. But the thing is that it's not
32,000 years. But so you're saying there's gaps in that, and it's not.
Well, there's no question that there's gaps in
that.
Yeah, we need to take it. I mean, the Bible does not give you every single genealogical construction. There's no question about that whatsoever. But even beyond that, what I pointed to was Cain and Abel. I mean, a lot of people say, where did Cain and Abel get their wives? They're the only two kids that Adam and Eve had. Well, that would be a legitimate question if we were supposing that the Bible gave us a history of every single one of Adam and Eve's kids over a 1,000-year period of time. But the Bible simply doesn't. It gives you highlights in sort of mountain peaks, you might say, in terms of the data.
Well, okay, that sounds good to me. I watch your program or listen to your program a lot, and I find it very illuminating. Keep up the good work. Thank you for answering my question.
You're welcome, and thank you so much for calling in and asking that question. It's a very important question. Let's go back to the phone lines. Talk to Deborah, listening in Seattle, Washington, on the web. Hi, Deborah. Deborah, are you there? I'll try to get back to you, Deborah, because I don't hear you. Let's go to Stuart in Charleston, South Carolina, listening on Sirius XM 131. Hi, Stuart.
Hello, Hank. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm quite well. Thank you so very much for asking. Yeah, my question is that we're in the season of Easter, and I've got some commentary to do this evening, and part of my commentary that I'm going to do this evening is to talk a little bit about Christ hanging on the cross. Now, I understand that the Bible doesn't say exactly that the nails were drawn through his hands, but we get the impression because of the holes that he showed to his disciples. So it just says that the nails were in his hands from the sight. But when I read about crucifixion, it tells me that in order to do a crucifixion, they would have placed the nails in his wrist because his body weight wouldn't have been able to be held by the nails in his hand. So I'm just trying to find out how much truth is in the hands or the wrist.
Yeah, it's a good question, and it is true that it is often posited that it has to be the wrist because the hands wouldn't support crucifixion. But, I mean, I don't think that you can determine, based on the biblical text, where it was the hands or the wrist, because the wrist would be part of or thought of the whole hand structure. But I think probably what you need to look at, therefore, is the archaeological evidence of how the Romans did crucifixion. You got to remember that they had a long time to perfect the art of crucifixion. They didn't invent it, for sure. The Persians were crucifying people long before the Romans were. But they did perfect crucifixion. So it may very well have been that just as there was a little ledge on which you could push up to grasp small gulps of air, And that would make the crucifixion process even more horrifying because it'd prolong it. So they may have found a way of using washers, as my good friend Dr. Paul Meyer argues. He was a co-author in one of my books, The Da Vinci Code Factor Fiction. He argues that this is what they did to hold the hands in place because, as you've correctly pointed out, putting a nail through the middle of your palm would not be sufficient to hold your hands in place. So, again, we'd have to have further archaeological evidence. And I don't know that that evidence is, at this point, absolutely incontrovertible. But the biblical text isn't designed to tell you one way or the other because the hand can involve both the wrist part of the hand as well as the palm part of the hand.
Okay. I guess that for most folks who look at it when they see illustrations, they'll see the picture and they'll show that Christ showed his hands. And so we get it's implied that the nails were definitely driven. But I went through all the Gospels and I didn't see where it said that the nails were driven in his hands.
Yeah, I mean, this is a loose way of speaking about an entire structure. And if I show you, you want to see the wound in my hand, and the wound happens to be in the wrist as opposed to the palm, you're not going to say, hey, wait a minute, you said it was in your hand. It's just a general way of talking about that part of my anatomy.
Okay. And also, last but not least, I understand that women were never crucified because of such an excruciating death. Is that also true?
I don't know. That's a good question. Okay. I'd have to research and return on that. I haven't heard that. And I don't think it's true, but I could very well be wrong on that. Let me see if I can check that out during a break, or maybe come back on tomorrow's edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast and make a comment about that.
Yes, sir. The commentary that I was reading, it doesn't give the author's name here, but he said that because it was so excruciating, and that word excruciating also has a tie to crucifixion, and because of pain, they just did not crucify women. But
yeah, it's really interesting. What you just point out is a very important note. The word excruciating literally means out of the cross. And that word, interestingly enough, had to be codified to fully communicate the horror of crucifixion. So good for you. You're absolutely right. That's a word that was coined to communicate the excruciating pain of the crucifixion process.
Wow. Well, thank you so very much for taking the time and answering that for me. That helps me a great deal.
You got it. And thanks for stumping me right here on live radio.
Thank you, sir.
You got it. And, of course, this is one of the things that we have to do. If you don't know the answer to a question, you have to research and return. So now if I do the Bible Answer Man broadcast for another 30 years and someone asks that question next time, I'll have the answer to that question. I probably should know the answer to that question, but I really honestly never looked into it. So I'll either check it out during a break or I'll talk about it on tomorrow's edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Good on you, Stuart. Good questions. We're going to be back after a station break with more answers to your questions right here on the Bible Answer Man broadcast. A shout out to all of those that stand shoulder to shoulder with us in the battle for life and truth. Without you, we most certainly could not do what we do. And so we are deeply, deeply grateful and invite people to join Sears' monthly support team or give this month. The resources that are available are simply exquisite, Union with Christ by Rankin Wilborn and The Spirit of the Disciplines by Dallas Willard. You know, if you see my copy of The Spirit of the Disciplines, you'll know that I am a huge, huge fan of that particular book. You know, Christian life is not relegated to interior acts of the mind. We have to exercise disciplines if we are going to be able to deal with the temptations that come our way. Be right back.
Nothing is more basic or central to knowing and enjoying God than union with Christ. It's what the Bible is all about. It's the very heart of the Christian faith and what makes the gospel good news. Yet, if you asked most people today, what is the gospel? Union with Christ is likely not what springs to mind. Something is terribly amiss. Be sure to read Rankin Wilborn's essential book, Union with Christ, The Way to Know and Enjoy God.
To receive your copy, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. We'll be back in just a moment with more from Hank Hanegraaff.
Has God spoken? Are the words of Scripture merely human in origin, or are they in fact the very words of God Himself? 3 years in the making and based on two decades of research and reflection, Hank Hanegraaff's monumental book, Has God Spoken?, answers what is surely the most important question facing our world. In Has God Spoken? Memorable Proofs of the Bible's Divine Inspiration, Hank counters the contentions of the Bible attackers and clearly shows that belief in the Holy Scriptures is not a guess or wishful thinking. It is the only logical conclusion after an honest examination of overwhelming evidence. Order Has God Spoken? From the Christian Research Institute by calling 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. Equip.org. In his book, Union with Christ, Pastor Rankin Wilburn shows that our neglect of union with Christ explains the gaps between our faith and our lives. When the work of Christ for us becomes abstracted from the person of Christ within us, is it any wonder there is a chasm between our beliefs and our experiences? If we're serious about being agents of change for God's kingdom, we must first realize that we cannot be transforming unless we ourselves are being transformed. And that means putting down deep roots into the life-transforming waters of God's Spirit. Be sure to read Union with Christ, The Way to Know and Enjoy God by Rankin Wilburn. Receive your copy by calling 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or just visit online at equip.org. When you need answers about the Bible and the intersection of our faith and culture, you turn to the Bible Answer Man broadcast and the Christian Research Institute. But did you know we're entirely supported by God's provision through friends like you? In appreciation for your gift of ministry support today, we'll send you Hank's book, The Third Day, a convincing case study on the most important truth of Christianity, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Johnny Erickson Tada has said, Hank leaves no stone unturned, thoroughly portraying the resurrection as our grand hope, the glorious springboard from which we all dive into eternity. Strengthen your defense of the resurrection and increase your confidence in your own eternal future. Call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org now. In the book, Union with Christ, Pastor Rankin Wilburn writes, our neglect of union with Christ explains the gaps between our faith and our lives. When the work of Christ for us becomes abstracted from the person of Christ within us, is it any wonder there is a chasm between our heads and our hearts, or between our beliefs and our experiences? Don't miss Pastor Wilburn's Union with Christ, The Way to Know and Enjoy God. To receive your copy, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's many outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org. We now return to the Bible Answer Man broadcast and your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you so much, Randy. The quote of the day comes from Megan Ullman. She's the author of Seeing Red, The Handmaid's Tale, Human Dignity and Hope. That is the cover story in the current edition of the Christian Research Journal, which you can subscribe to at equip.org. At any rate, the quote of the day comes from Megan, who says this, and this is just too delicious not to highlight. She says, where sexual freedom becomes the fulcrum of society, individuals are commodified. Human beings, especially women, are reduced to products to be enjoyed at the whims and passions of others. Again, the quote of the day by Megan Allman. You'll find it in the Christian Research Journal in the article that I alluded to. It's a great cover story, Hulu's The Handmaid's Tale. Let's go back to the phone lines. We'll talk next to Deborah, listening in Seattle, Washington, on the web. Hi, Deborah.
Hi there.
Hi.
Yes, so there might be an occasional dog bark.
I feel like I'm at home.
So I was in Alcoholics Anonymous for about 10 years, got clean and sober, and then I decided to rededicate my life to Christ. But before that, around that time, so now I go to Celebrate Recovery, which is a Christian-based program, but they use the 12 steps also. But I found this article online that talks about how AA is not Christian, that the roots of AA are not Christian. And so I'm kind of confused, because Celebrate Recovery uses the 12 steps, and of course they have biblical reasons and all that, but still, you know, after reading this article, and some of the people that wrote the big book were not Christian, they were more like new age type spirituality.
Well, I mean, here's what I would say about that. I mean, if you look at Bill Wilson, and I think it was Bob Smith, they're both alcoholics, and certainly their spiritual roots go back to the Oxford group that was headquartered in a church in New York. And they're originally Orthodox, however, not as interested in right doctrine as right practice or experience. But what the vision was a fellowship of alcoholics dedicated to helping each other stay sober through a program open to all religions. However, having said that, if you look at the 12 steps, they have their genesis in Christian principles: conviction of sin, conversion, confession, prayer, witness, etc. They have been applied in a pluralistic sense. I think people who are saying that these principles can't be used today probably have some wrong-headed ideas. I mean, just as in the U.S., there are many universities like Harvard, which were founded on Christian principles, they need to be reclaimed for Christ. And that's what some of these groups that you're alluding to are trying to do. They're trying to reclaim the principles for Christ. You know, there are problems with many of these groups. The problem is when recovery from alcohol is considered salvation in the final sense, well, then you have a huge problem. If the AA group becomes a substitute for the church, you have another problem. But certainly I think that these 12 points can be reclaimed for Christ. I also want to point out another possible problem that comes to mind, and that is when you call a behavior a disease, it can lessen the sense of personal responsibility. I do think, however, that the 12 steps were rooted in personal responsibility, because a person had to make a list, for example, of those that they had harmed, and they have to make restitution where possible and confess their sin. So again, I think the principles are ultimately rooted in Scripture, and it's great that there are Christian groups that are trying to reclaim those roots.
Okay, well, thank you.
You got it. Thanks, Deborah. And the dog. Back to the phone lines. We'll talk next to Scott, listening in Surrey, British Columbia, Canada. Lots of Canadian listeners today. K-A-R-I. Hi, Scott.
Hi, how's it going, Hank? Yeah, looking forward to seeing you again up here. I saw you in 93, I think, at Surrey Alliance.
Yeah, I got to get back up there.
I'm a gardener, and I want to call in question the carbon dating in general, because I, being a gardener, I've seen so many levels, ashes and ashes upon ashes upon ashes, because people have burn piles still here in Surrey and whatnot. So I, as a gardener, I totally disagree with the concept of carbon dating. And 90% of people don't even know that the ozone layer is liquid oxygen. And so there goes climate change right up in a barrel of monkeys right there.
So your point is?
My point is I believe that it is not axiomatic that that carbon dating is zombie science.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, here's a couple of thoughts for you in that regard. First of all, when you talk about carbon dating, there's a bigger umbrella, radiometric dating, and that of course measures radioactive decay and the nuclear radiation rate necessary to make sense of a young universe would have been lethal to plant, animal, and even human life. And to date, no change in the rate of decay of any geological significant radioactive isotope has been discovered. The age of the Earth as determined through these dating processes corresponds to age parameters that are projected by such astronomical measurements as things that I've mentioned on the Bible Answer Man broadcast in the past, star life, et cetera, which also demonstrates that the age of the Earth is hundreds of times older than that presumed by people who take the young Earth perspective. So I think it's important to be fair to the process, to look at it as an overarching process, not just as the subset, the carbon dating subset. I'd also point out that there has been a concerted effort to disprove radiometric dating by subjecting the atoms to extreme pressures, to temperatures that are very extreme as well, to electromagnetic variations and the like, and to date, no change in the rate of decay of any geologically significant radioactive isotope has been discovered. So, Scott, I don't know exactly where you're going with that, but I don't think that the idea that somehow or other this ultimately points to a young universe is plausible. The evidence that we find not only through this particular stream of measurement or thought corresponds to what we find in other streams of thought. So the idea that we live in a young universe, I think there are too many reasons that we can say otherwise, that we don't live in a young universe. We live in a very old universe. And again, I think that what people are trying to do with the Bible is read paradigms into Scripture that Scripture isn't designed to communicate. What we want to do is we want to look at God's book of nature, and when we do that, we see that we live in an old universe. People use this to try to discount the Bible, but again, the premise is wrong. As mentioned to an earlier caller today, the premise is that the Bible somehow or other communicates that we live in a 5,000-year-old universe, but that simply is not true. The reality that nothing travels faster than the speed of light and that billions of light years separate us from distant galaxies would lead logically to an assumption, the assumption being that the age of the universe is measured not in thousands of years, but rather in billions of years. I often, as I just alluded to a moment ago, point to star life, which I think is a persuasive argument that the universe is also measured not in thousands of years. You know, star life depends on star mass. A star like the sun has enough fuel to burn for maybe 9 billion years. The fuel of a star, and this is a little counterintuitive, that's half the size of the sun, may last as long as 20 billion years. And then therefore, the universe is presumed to be at least as old as the oldest stars within it. And while biological history may be a matter of inference, astronomical history is a function of direct observation. Star formation can be observed in all stages of its life. You can see a star in infancy, you can see a star in midlife, and you can see a white dwarf star, which has burned out its nuclear fusion. Also, I mean, there are a lot of other things you can look at. You can look at sequential layers, and if you're in Canada, you're not too far from this, in the formation of ice cores in places like Antarctica and Greenland. And these sequential layers point to an Earth that is far older than 6,000 years. You know, you have arborists counting tree rings. That's a way of determining how old a tree is. And researchers count sequential layers to date the age of ice cores as well. And that data log seems to demonstrate that the age of the Earth is at least hundreds of times older than the age presumed by young Earth creationists. Now, this is a debate that we can have in a civil fashion. There are people in the young Earth community that want to make this an acid test for orthodoxy. I think that that is unfortunate. I think that what they're doing is they're creating division by this kind of reasoning. It's unnecessary to make it an acid test for orthodoxy. I often also come to mind, as I'm sitting here, I often communicate an observable astronomical event, which was known as Supernova 1987A. This was an event with an identifiable before and after. So prior to 1987, the supernova was a star in a galaxy 168,000 light years away. Then on, February 23rd, 1987, the star exploded and became a supernova. In other words, 168,000 years ago, the star explodes, and in 1987, the light of that event finally reached the Earth. Unless, of course, God created the universe 6,000 years ago, then the supernova would be like a documentary film of an event that never really happened. So the notion that the universe is not authentically old, but merely appears to be old, as some communicate, I think causes a lot of problems. What good teacher would ask a student to put faith in a textbook intentionally filled with lies? The universe in which we live, we can see God's imprimatur, and we can read it, and we ought to read it just like we read a good science book, just like we learn to read the Bible in the sense in which it's intended. Out of time for this edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Do remember, Monday through Friday at this time, your questions answered live when you dial 888-ASK-HANK. And thanks for all of those that stand shoulder to shoulder with us in the battle for life and truth.
You've been listening to the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. To learn more about Hank or the Christian Research Institute, just go to equip.org. Equip.org is a fountain of information and resources designed to help you defend the faith and grow in your knowledge of the truth. You can also stream the broadcast live or download archived broadcast. To talk with a resource consultant by phone, call 888-7000-CRI. Or you can write to us at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is supported solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter.
In his book, Union with Christ, Pastor Rankin Wilburn shows that our neglect of union with Christ explains the gaps between our faith and our lives. When the work of Christ for us becomes abstracted from the person of Christ within us, is it any wonder there is a chasm between our beliefs and our experiences? If we're serious about being agents of change for God's kingdom, we must first realize that we cannot be transforming unless we ourselves are being transformed. And that means putting down deep roots into the life-transforming waters of God's Spirit. Be sure to read Union with Christ, The Way to Know and Enjoy God by Rankin Wilborn. Receive your copy by calling 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. Or just visit online at equip.org.
Has God spoken? Are the words of Scripture merely human in origin, or are they in fact the very words of God Himself? 3 years in the making, and based on 2 decades of research and reflection,
Hank Hanegraaff's monumental book, Has God Spoken?, answers what is surely the most important question facing our world. In Has God Spoken? Memorable Proofs of the Bible's Divine Inspiration, Hank counters the contentions of the Bible attackers and clearly shows that belief in the Holy Scriptures is not a guess or wishful thinking. It is the only logical conclusion after an honest examination of overwhelming evidence. Order Has God Spoken? From the Christian Research Institute by calling 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. Equip.org.